Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's July 3rd, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm a Scott Patriotic Long.
How does that come into play today?
Well, it's the July 3rd show, so it's yeah. Closest to Independence Day. So, you know, happy birthday, America.
And your favorite more.
British fans. we won.
That is not cool, dude.
Well, it was 200 some years ago. I think they're over it.
Too soon. Too soon.
And their poor the women's soccer team lost on a terrible goal this week, too. Otherwise, they'd
be that was brutal.
United States on Sunday, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And we could have that war all over again.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we're back. You know, we've been gone for a while. You were up in Connecticut. I was out in Vegas again. And, you know, we did a couple shows in advance. So, a ton of stuff, of course, always happens when we take that time off. So, we got to catch everybody up on that. So, a couple things. One, we're going to skip a couple of the regular segments so we have time to delve in on all the stuff that we missed. And then also, I was out in Vegas actually working pretty hard this time, hanging out at the Poker TDA Summit, the annual, or actually every two-year gathering of poker tournament directors to discuss the rules. Lots of stuff that came out of that, including a controversial decision to go back to last card off the deck before your hand gets skilled. And I will go into more mind-numbing detail on that on next week's show. Don't want to bog us down this week with all the stuff we have going on, but yeah, lots of smaller rule changes and that to talk about next week. But
yeah, don't forget, our hotline is 206-338-6344, and you can email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com, just in case you have something you want to contribute for the listener spotlight or call the floor or anything else.
Look at that. Perfect.
We're going to skip that stuff today and talk about a lot of other very exciting things and some controversial things, and this is a good show.
Yeah, lots to talk about here. So first thing was, while we're gone, R Game International Holdings, a Hong Kong company that specializes in social gaming, paid $35 million in cold hard cash to acquire the World Poker Tour.
Yeah, you know, this is going to make it probably even bigger than ever, I guess. But one of the things that when I read the story, I thought about was, you know, it was sold before,
right,
to like Binwin or Bwin or whatever that. And I was like, I forgot about that. And it didn't really change in my mind. Like, it didn't do anything for us, except it probably made it bigger at the time.
Right.
Because they pretty much grew after that. So how does this affect us now, Scott? How do you think this is going to affect us as poker players, poker media people, everything?
I think you're right. I think we didn't see at least a lot of tangible difference to the WPT when Bwin bought it.
Right.
Which, by the way, was for like $12.5 million or something, so
right.
Nice little investment for them, right? And I don't know exactly whether this is going to be any different or not. I mean, obviously, this company is huge over in Hong Kong, has tremendous reach in the Asian market, so it's certainly going to help World Poker Tour expand there. So I guess if you want to go a couple leaps down the skips down the pond,
yeah.
It's going to be, it makes poker bigger on the global scale, which hopefully will trickle back to us ugly Americans who only care about poker here in America.
But true.
Even though it is called the World Poker Tour, you know.
But that's true. I mean, it went from here to Bwin. Isn't Bwin like a English company, or is it?
Yeah, I'm not sure where it's based, but yes.
Yeah, I think, right. So, I mean, that's sort of, it grew a little bit over there in Europe and whatever, and grew a little bit bigger here, and now it's going to be probably truly global, truly World Poker Tour with this company. This company's huge in social gaming and stuff, so I think they're anticipating something that they can do with this, too. It's not, you know, just buy it for no reason, so this should be exciting, exactly, what they're going to do with it.
Yeah, so I guess we'll just see, but, you know, I talked to one of the people at WPT, and he's very excited about the potential here. And obviously, the CEO of the company was very excited about this too. So you know, you can usually read between the lines where it's kind of a takeover that people there are unhappy about. Yeah. And this is clearly not this. This is that in this case, these people are very excited to see where our game is going to take the WPT in the future. So.
Yeah, it's not like you're going to see sweeping changes to the television coverage or something of that nature. I mean, they're going to pretty much do status quo with that stuff and then just expand. There's no way they're going to, you know, spend $35 million for a product and then cut it back. So,
it would be nice, though, if they added, like, trap doors, you know. So when you got knocked out of a tournament, you just, like, fell down, you know, like on the game show. Like
Austin Powers.
Oh, yeah, or you get the slime from You Can't Do That on Television.
Slime.
See, there's a lot of untapped market in the TV of poker, or television of poker. So,
yeah, that's what they need you for.
Potential. Yeah. Absolutely. I'm just full of ideas.
That's right.
All right, well, Brian Micon, the owner of the Bitcoin online poker site Seals with Clubs, RIP, will return to the United States to answer charges of running an unlicensed online poker site. So I found this a little surprising because, you know, his house gets raided, family gets spooked, right?
Yeah.
He immediately goes on Twitter and says, I'm out of here. I'm going to Antigua.
Right.
See you guys on the beaches, right?
Yep.
And, of course, we're all like, hey, get out while you can, right?
Yep.
And he gets out, and then, of course, he gets charged with running this unlicensed online poker site. And I didn't think we were ever going to see him back in the States again.
But he's back.
But apparently he was supposed to be in court this week, and I haven't seen an update yet, so I don't know whether that happened or not. But he's coming back. So I guess that's either means that... his lawyers are fairly confident that they can make this go away if he shows up as good faith, right?
Right.
He's just willing to come back and take a stand.
I read the story. I think they let him off on his own recognizance while they prepare his case or whatever.
Right.
And
yeah,
so
yeah.
Since someone who was willing to flee already is left on his own recognizance, I think that they're not too worried about what they're. You know, I don't think that the people who are going to be prosecuting him are looking for blood either, because I mean this guy already fled the country and now they're saying no, we trust you not to flee the country again. I mean, they may have taken his passport or something.
Oh, sure, but, yeah, sure, yes, yeah, his passport,
so. But still, even so, I mean, that's trustworthy there. So I wondered, I forget now the original story, did he bring his family with him to Antigua?
I thought he did. Yeah,
he did. Okay, because I remember, and when I read the story now, he's talking about, I've got a wife and kids, and you know. And so I just wondered if he took him with him or if he left him here and that's why he came back, because he couldn't be away from them anymore or whatever.
I could be wrong, but I don't know. Thought,
yeah, he probably did take his kids. I just couldn't remember.
I thought they were going down to Antigua together. So.
Yeah.
I guess we'll keep on this and see whether this turns into something bigger than it seems like it is going to at this point.
The other thing, too, is poker, especially online poker, tends to be something that the government has to catch up to. You know, it's
sure.
The internet itself, with all cases of all kinds of crimes or perceived crimes or whatever, are things that they always have to catch up to. And I wonder if that's part of the lawyers here thinking too, is that this is, I mean, there's no precedent for any of this. Isn't, you know, this guy's doing digital money in a digital site, and so.
Well, there's this also was a Nevada raid too, I believe. I mean, I don't remember now whether these are actual federal charges or state charges, but I thought at the time the raid, it was a Nevada gaming enforcement kind of thing. So it could be more just, you know, WSOP.com saying, hey, come on.
Yeah.
We're licensed. We went through all this process to be here, and this guy can run his site, so why don't you take care of that?
Yeah.
Could be. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. No, you're absolutely right. Could be that. We'll see where it goes.
Well, we see that a lot. I actually took my first Lyft ride this week because I didn't want to bug you to come pick me up at the airport, and my wife couldn't. So I did a little, you know, Lyft, the Uber and Lyft, right? You know, ride share things, right? And they're not supposed to be operating at the airport, but they did. So like my little driver was fascinating, telling me how what he has to do to get around getting caught. He's got caught 3 times. And Uber's paid for it all the time. And but he talks about how they have these guys that are just hanging out in the parking garage looking for him. And he knows what they look like and knows how to dodge them now. And I'm like, wow, I wonder what those guys would be doing if they actually weren't just sitting around trying to catch a guy that's actually giving you a ride home in a clean car rather than disgusting cabs that operate here.
Wow.
And I think that's kind of the same thing here, right? It's probably, yeah. That was the point. He was like, you know, it's because they work for the commission that regulates the cabs. So, you know, of course the cabs are going to complain. The guy's going to go out and make sure that Uber and Lyft aren't here. You know, that makes sense.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how this goes. I have a feeling it's going to be like a slap on the wrist, though. I mean, he's not going to do any time, I don't think.
I wouldn't think so either, but yeah. I guess we'll see.
All right, we'll see.
All right, and then we got to catch up on the World Series. A lot of events happened there since our last show. And first, I'll give a plug-in for our Antia Poker Tour at Gold Nugget Las Vegas. If you're listening to today on Thursday, not the actual day of the posted day of the show, you still have time to get down there and enter the last day of the main event. And get a chance to win your way on the cover of the magazine. So go to antiupmagazine.com/goldennugget for those details and get on over there quickly before registration ends. But across town over the World Series, a couple interesting things. Actually, surprising. I went through, I think, it's been 31 events that I'm catching us up on from the last show.
Right.
And I only found, like, four things to talk about.
Excellent.
I mean, it hasn't been very story headline worthy. I'm not saying exciting. Obviously, poker and not always terms have excitement at the end, but just not anything really worth talking about. It's kind of surprising, I think.
Well, I mean, at least we haven't ripped off our listeners here. They're not really missing out on too much by it, so that's good. It's a good thing. It's only a couple of stories here, a few stories.
All right. So first one, after Chow Toll Dog was eliminated from the final table of event number 28, he proposed to his girlfriend with cameras and spectators watching. She said yes.
Now, what do you think about these things? You know, sometimes, you know, every time you watch like a sitcom or something, you know, the woman's always like, you know, do whatever you want to do, but don't ever like propose to me on a jumbotron or don't use a blimp or don't put any pressure on me. Like this happened recently in a bowling event. Guy, he made the stepladder finals. I think he wins the event. And they're like, hey, this is great, isn't it? And he goes, not as great as this. Honey, will you marry me? And then she's like, if I say no, then it's not that great. And it was on TV.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, these poor women are being put on the spot, the pressure to say yes. I would love to know the statistics of how many people said yes in public places, then later said
and then
no.
Said, what the heck did
what
you
were you thinking? Exactly. I feel so bad for these women. And... you know, I mean, probably most of them probably all say yes and stay that way and meant to say yes and wanted them to ask her. But it's just, oh, the pressure on this poor woman.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always waiting for that first woman to say, yeah, let me get back to you on that. Because that's probably going to be the last of these things you ever see, right?
Yeah.
Because every guy's going to see that on YouTube and go, oh, man.
One woman needs to take a stand.
Exactly.
To save all the other women. Exactly. Take one for the team, ladies.
Now, I'll say this. Everybody gets engaged however they want, and marriage is happy. So I'm not, you know, raining on anybody's parade here. But I will say that, I'm getting a little annoyed with these public engagements. You know, obviously the Jumbotron one is way jump the shark. You know, how many people have been getting married on a Jumbotron, right?
Yeah.
But then we had a couple get married on the Amazing Race this week. They get to pit stop and gets down on one knee. And I'm like, not this week, this season. And I'm like, ugh. This guy's doing this. So, you know, I guess personally, I just think that an engagement is a private thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's that moment that you and your spouse are going to remember the entire time. It's just the two of you professing your love to each other. And the fact that you're sharing it with a bunch of people you don't even know.
Right.
You know, not even just your family, you know, at a family gathering. It's like, you know, public, right? It seems to me just a little weird. And also, you know, I didn't ask to be invited to this engagement, right?
That's right. I don't want to see this.
So it's a little weird, too. I mean, again, I'm not trying to rain anybody's celebration because I know people kind of love go gaga over these things because we obviously people write about them in newspapers and things, and we just spent the last 5 minutes talking about it. So it works in getting the publicity out there. But I don't know. It's just not my cup of tea.
No, I went to a Yankee game last week, New York Yankee Stadium. And, you know, the seventh inning stretch thing, and they do the little follow the peanut underneath the and then they've got, here's some shout outs to people having birthdays and special events, and two of them were, will you marry me? And
two of them? Two. Oh, that's even worse.
And what's really worse, here's the really bad part about it, too, you didn't even know about yet. The first one was this eloquent written thing. He's like, since the first day we saw each other, our eyes met, and it was so, you know, flowery and romantic and everything. He's like, will you do me the honor of making me the happiest man, blah, 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 and marry me, blah, blah, blah. The next one was like, yo, Adrian, will you marry me? You know, I mean, it was hilarious, the two, the contrasting to it. So the woman who gets the second proposal is kind of like, what, you had to pay for more words or something? You couldn't write something a little more romantic than marry me? I mean, it was hilarious. And I'm just like, are you serious? 50,000 people watching this baseball game and you're proposing to her that way. And so make sure you're the only one, right? If you're going to do the Jumbotron, make sure you're the only one on that day, buddy.
Oh, I love it. All right, well, back at the World Series and non-engagement news. Brian Hastings became the first double winner of this year's series when he won the 1500 10-game mix event. 10 games, wow. Man.
Clockwork, though, somebody went in two. Who had Brian Hastings in the pool?
Yeah, well, you know, when you have 60-some events, it's, I don't want to say statistically whatever, you know, because it's probably, right. But it just... I'm not surprised anymore.
Not anymore, no.
He wins two. And he's had a couple of the final tables, too, I believe. He's making a real big run at the Player of the Year race.
Awesome.
He's having a great series. Carol Fuchs was the first, I'm sorry, who was the co-screenwriter of the movie No Reservations. Never saw it, did you?
Me neither. I have no idea what that is.
Was the first female champion this series, winning the 1500 Dealer's Choice event.
Nice.
A lot of mixed game things going on.
Yeah.
And then the High Roller for One Drop Charity event had a number of storylines this year. Former world champ Jonathan Duhamel won the event. Runner-up Bill Klein donated all of his winnings to the One Drop Charity. And the final table included Daniel Coleman, Phil Hellmuth, and Anthony Zinno, who's also been on a tear ever since he appeared on the cover of Antia magazine.
That's right. And on Hoarded Orders.
And a spectator suffered a heart attack in the stands when the event was three-handed. Wow.
Oh, man.
Imagine Nolan Dahl trying to write this story.
Keep it to one page PDFs, please.
Yeah, he did. It was amazing. I'm like, I was looking at this, like, oh, what are we talking about? I'm like, I'm going to talk about it all. This is just amazing.
Yeah, that's a pretty big... But, you know, it's the High Roller, so you're expecting some big names for the right. Final part there, but that's the heart attack and... you know, donation stuff. When they say they donated all of his winnings, does that mean he takes out his buy-in and his trouble and his meals? Or do you think they
I don't know, because obviously you're on the hook for taxes, unless I guess you never actually receive the money. Maybe there's a way, because the charity is part of this event, that maybe you could just have that money sent directly to them, and then you're not on the hook for charity.
Yeah.
I mean, for the taxes, I think, maybe?
I don't know.
And if that's the case, then yeah, I guess, hey, give me back... $111,000 for my buy-in or something.
Yeah, if I got to pay taxes on this money, give me the taxes back, and then I'll, you know what I mean. So
I don't know.
Weird, but I mean, so but obviously I'm not diminishing what he did. Yeah, exactly. It's incredibly generous. I just was curious when they say the winnings. What does that mean? Like, does that mean the winnings? Or does that mean everything?
Yeah, and I'll say again, completely generous. I'm not criticizing this guy at all. That's an amazing feat to give that to. To the charity, right?
Yeah.
I will say, you know, I play a lot of charity events, and I tend to try to give back a lot of what I win to. I don't think I've ever donated everything I won back, but it is kind of odd for the other players, isn't it?
Oh, because they feel pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I'm like, oh my god, this guy gave all his money back, and I'm like, yeah, I'll just take my check, please. And there's nothing wrong with either one of those, right?
Not because your buy-in is the charity.
And but I just think it's odd. I don't know if there's any solution to that problem. Maybe it's not a problem that he's a solution, but I will say it does, I think, kind of make other players feel kind of greedy when they're not really greedy, maybe.
Well,
or maybe they are greedy. I don't know. I mean, they're making their own decision.
Dare I say this? I don't know if I should even say this, but does this is the same parallel here with the do the add-on for the dealer tip? The dealers, you know, they get the add-on, but then if you win, you're expected to give more to the dealers.
I think that's probably a different case there.
Well, I'm not saying that dealers are charity cases. What I'm saying is, you know, you're entering this tournament, it's a charity event, so your buy-in already covers your donation to charity. And then when you cash, now if this guy gives all his winnings, are you supposed to feel obligated to give your winnings because he did that? Just like when you buy add-ons. You're tipping the dealers with your add-ons, but then if you make money in the tournament, or if it's a tournament like the World Series where they take out a percentage for the dealers already, right. You're expected to give them more because you made more money.
I would say it's similar in the sense that everybody has their own idea of what dealers should be making in the tournament,
right?
And everybody has their own idea on how much the charity should be making in a charity event. and that's different for everyone, right?
Right. So I think it's
similar
that
the same
way.
Thing. Yeah. I think people that want to tip on top of even if a dealer add-on are like, you know, hey, I think the dealer should get X percentage, and looking at the dealer add-on, they're not going to get that, so I'm going to give a little bit more, which is generally how it's structured these days.
Right.
You know, that's a decision they make, and is fine. I don't think it's necessarily to shame anybody into anything. But I think it's the same with charity. And this guy obviously, you know, thought that whatever his piece of the $111,000, I think it's 10% went to the charity, right? So, you know, $11,000 or something went to the charity.
Right.
Like, hey, you know, I'm going to be a good guy. I'm going to give the rest. You know, that's great. That's awesome.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I say it just, you know, it's, I mean, now you're looking at the, now you're the third person, or I mean, now you're a winner, obviously, right? And you're like, hey, what do you think about Bill Klein donating all his money to charity? that's great.
That's great, bro.
Awesome. He's a sweet guy. Can I pull a cab around? I need to go. It makes it kind of uncomfortable. Now, that's, I'm not encouraging anybody not to do that anymore. I think it's great. But I'm just making a point that it's one of these kind of social issues that we have.
Sure. I mean, and get back to the Taylor tip thing. I mean, you finish fifth, and a guy finishes fourth, and you're getting paid out, and you tip $40 to the guy because you got paid $400 or something, and you say, here, give it to the dealers. Now the guy in fourth place is behind you. He just saw you do that. Now,
like,
do I have to pay $660 to tip him? You know, it's pressure on him. It's the same kind of thing. And, you know, it's just how you feel comfortable with what your situation is. And do we know anything about Bill Klein?
Actually, I've never heard the name before.
No, so he's probably a rich guy. Yeah. Who's just, you know, I mean, so
I would hope he is. Other than that, that is amazing, amazing story.
Yeah. So, I mean, rich dude, you know, and says, you know what, I enjoyed myself, I had a great time, finished second. This charity deserves this money, and I can afford to do it, so here you go, and it's a great thing. And that's the thing, too. It's all about awareness and raising more money, and that's great, and I'm glad he did it.
All right, so then the last thing that happened in the World Series, and this is really taking on his life of his own, so... The Pledge of Allegiance caused a stir soon after the seniors event began. In Oklahoma, Johnny Hale addressed players, as he usually does. He then gave the microphone to his daughter, who asked everyone to stand and recite the pledge. The request drew rebukes from some players who didn't think it was appropriate since this was a global event. And then Nolan Dalla, who's a director of media relations for the World Series, but has a very popular blog in which he reminds folks that he speaks just for him, not for the World Series.
Yeah.
He's obviously never shy about his opinions on there. He certainly had one on this too, and didn't like it.
I read Nolan Dalla's thing, and I have to say I agree with him more than 100% if that were possible.
It's technically not possible.
It's not technically not possible, but you know, guys say give 105%. Well, I give 105% to Nolan Dalla. You know, first of all, I mean, okay, so a lot of people are just old school and they're caught up in their, you know, in their own worlds, and they're not really realizing what they're doing sometimes. And when that stuff happens, I just let it go. I don't say anything because, you know, what am I going to do, you know?
Right.
But in this case, I mean, first of all, it's right there in the title. Pledge of Allegiance. This is a worldwide event. Why would people who don't live in this country, first of all, even people in this country don't have to pledge allegiance to anything, but...
Right.
But why would you try to do, and then we're talking about social pressure before, about tipping and charity event. Why would you force these people not only do this, but then to listen to this if they didn't want to be a part of it or stand for it or whatever? It's just insensitive. It's really insensitive, in my opinion. I read the story that Nolan wrote. I read his blog thing, and I knew he was going to object anyway because he's an atheist,
right,
yeah, and he's against the whole under God thing, and which he very well should be because of the reasons he gave. I mean, you know, quick history lesson in America, you know, under God wasn't added to the Pledge of Allegiance until the 50s because of the whole Russian communism. They're against, you know, they're believing God, so we're going to prove that we do believe in God. We're going to put it on our paper money and put it in the. And it's just not right. It's just not right. And so I agree with him on so many levels. And then, you know, it's childlike to pledge an allegiance to something. You know, just because you were born here, you don't have to be forced to do these things. And to do it in a worldwide stage like this, I think it's absolutely just nauseating.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, the pledge has its place in America, and you know, I tend to agree with you. I think it's pretty funny in a country built on freedom that you are, and poor people are like, I don't want to become like Nazi Germany, but we stand and put our hands on our heart and pledge our allegiance to this country. It's one of those things. I think we just grew up in school. People say, "Hey, you say this, right?" And you say it because you're kids and you don't know any better. And I'm sure that's the wrong way of saying it. You just do what your teacher tells you to do, right?
Right.
And then, you know, we can always cite the pledge here in America, like by heart, right?
Yeah.
And then when you stop and you get older and you start to actually think about it, you're like, a little weird. You know, for some of us. Now, other people, obviously, this is a very, very important thing. It's part of American fabric to pledge your allegiance. And, you know, obviously, you do that at all kinds of different events. We still do it at the city commission meetings I go to, which I think is a little odd. But that's fine. But that's America. That's in America, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's a different story for people to get offended when you're asked to recite or stand or whatever, the Pledge of Allegiance at a commission meeting or a school or a church in America for where it's all Americans there, right? Where this thing just took on a whole thing is it's right. There were, I think, I don't know what the latest number is, but the last update that Seth Polansky, the media guy, sent out, 99 countries represented in the World Series of Poker this year.
Yep.
And I don't know how many were represented in the seniors event, but there were 4,700 players there, so I'm going to guess there were quite a few, right?
Yep.
So now it becomes a thing where, yeah, proud to be an American, great. I have no problem with that. But you got to think about the fact that now you've got people at that table who are not American, who now either have to sit there and look like the guy in church that doesn't pray, you know, or doesn't sing the hymn right at the wedding.
Yeah.
And that's awkward for them, right? Or that they have to awkwardly stand up and fake this pledge that, you know, obviously doesn't mean anything to them, right? And it's just uncomfortable for that. So now I know Johnny actually sent us a couple columns for our perusal. I don't believe we're going to run them, but one of the things he said was that Ty Stewart, the executive director, tells him two things every year when he gets up there to speak. Like, one, speak as long as you want because the seniors event's important, and two, recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I actually haven't seen Ty Stewart confirm that he's told him that, but if that's the case, that's an interesting wrinkle to the story as well, too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and because in a way, I mean, that it's one thing if Johnny's running an event and he wants to run it the way he wants to run it, and everybody is signing up for his personal event, and it's something that's in the rules of his or something of that nature. But when you get Ty on board, if you know, it's allegedly say that, well, he's representing the World Series now essentially, and that's
right.
And now you're saying Detroit. Now the World Series of Poker is on the world scale, saying we think everyone should be reciting an allegiance to our flag, and that's just controversy. It's never going to fly.
Well, then the flip side of all this, I think, is the people that say, come on, are people really this sensitive now? You know, if you don't want to say the pledge, you don't say the pledge. You just sit there, fine. And yeah, okay, I'll buy that to some degree. But I think those people also have to realize that it does make people uncomfortable. And maybe they're fine. I promise you there's plenty of people there that stood up and recited that pledge and were happy to make other people feel uncomfortable. And I think that's wrong. But I think there needs to be a recognition that that your strongly held belief is not shared by other people, and that you know, in the spirit of poker and whatever else, that we're trying to make people inclusive and feel happy there. And that doesn't mean that we don't do anything anymore, but there's time and place for some of this stuff. So
it's all solvable by a moment of silence. Every bit of it.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Everyone stand for a moment of silence, and if you want to use that moment to pray to your deity, to go over your game plan, to say a pledge of something, go ahead. A moment of silence. Keep it to yourself, and you're getting your moment to do what you want to do. There's no reason to say it out loud, you know. If
you know, and that's an excellent point too, because one of the things that they talk about with the seniors event is that they do, obviously, the same with the ladies event. Both of these are different types of events where they have some more pageantry before it starts.
Right.
It's part of it. And one of the parts of the senior pageantry is, you know, unfortunately, because it's a seniors event and players are older, right, is kind of a recognition of the players who are no longer with us from last year. And that, even speaks more to the point of needing a moment of silence, right? To reflect on those people if you choose to. And you're right. That I can't imagine anybody having a problem with.
Stand up and be quiet. I like to make noise. This offends my ability to use my voice box. No, I mean it's just ridiculous. I encourage everyone to read Nolan Dahl's blog anyway, not just for this, but for anything, because he's got some interesting views on things. But I agree with him on this. I think it's something that should not have happened. And you know, okay, so like I said, and it's more just ignorance than anything. It's one of the things that I've learned over the few years of doing this magazine and being a business owner with you, and is I try to put myself in other people's shoes that aren't Annie Up,
right?
And see how they are thinking or reacting to what we're doing, to whether it's, you know, an advertising deal with someone or the coverage of a story or whatever it is. Some I try to put myself in their position, and I try to do that now in life with everything that I do. I say, well, all right, I know how I feel about this. How does that person feel? Like, let's just, for instance, say they held an event in a Muslim country.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, okay, everyone get up and, you know, say something that is, you know, devoted to Allah.
Yeah,
or
pledge allegiance to Allah, right?
Yeah. And all of a sudden you're like, well, if you believe in a God and you that's not your God, or what? How do you feel about it? You're gonna hate that. You're not gonna want it. You're not gonna stand up and or not even the God part. You're not pledge your allegiance to that country, because
right.
It's the emblem of that country. It's that flag. When you go to Italy and play in a tournament, or you anywhere, you're not gonna pledge your allegiance to that country, and you're gonna feel uncomfortable to be forced to do that or hear that. That's not the stage for it. So if they just thought for a minute, hey, we're asking foreigners to pledge their allegiance to a foreign country and to a foreign country's ideals, and it's just so insensitive. And I think that, yeah, do I think a lot of things have gotten too far with politically correctness? Sure, I think some people are getting overly sensitive about some things, but in this case, you're talking about a country's religion, a country's ideology, and pledging your allegiance to that. It's just completely wrong. If they just sat down for a minute and thought about it, I don't think they would have done it. And
right.
If Ty really did say that, then he needs to be talked to about it too, I think.
Yeah, we'll find out how he responds to that. But you're right on those points. I guess the final point I'll say is that I'm sure these people have sat down and thought about it, and they just, I don't want to say they don't care. That's insensitive. They just, you know, I can see the argument. I do not agree with it, but I can see the argument that, hey, if you don't want to recite the pledge, then just sit there. And the insensitive part of that is thinking that that's all right. That those people do not feel marginalized not participating in an activity that so many other people are participating in. And that, I think, even if people sit down and think about it, they still don't care. It's kind of my experience. I'm not saying that happened here, but... You see that? I mean, again, every once in a while, I envy you for not being on Facebook it's become this nonstop political fight out there. And, you know, I try to stay away from all that, but I read them just to see what people are saying. And that generally I don't care if I'm offending you. You have the right not to be offended if you don't want to.
Right.
that's not really an argument, but.
Well, I mean,
I see why people think that, but it's not a valid argument.
No, you're right, and like we said before about, you know, being in other people's shoes, you can see something like this could just very well escalate to something like all the other stories you're seeing in Florida about, okay, if you're gonna have the Ten Commandments on the court steps, then the satanic, you know, those guys, and most people don't really understand that when you talk about Satanists, they're actually just people who are parroting. They're not really believing in Satan. They're showing you the craziness of what you're doing. If you just don't do anything, then we're all going to be equal. And that's their whole point of it. And it's like, okay, so these guys are putting commandments on here. We got to put a statue of our, you know, Satan here because you're doing it too. And they actually let them do this because they have to, because you can't do that. Same with this. Now, if you're letting them do the Pledge of Allegiance, then why aren't you letting other people do their things?
Wouldn't that be awesome? if after you get to the Pledge of Allegiance, some of the tiny guys stood up and said, "All right, I would like to lead my countrymen in our pledge."
Yes, exactly.
As soon as he sits down, then the Egyptian stands up, and then you're there all day. Like,
exactly.
You know, in the Pledge of Allegiance.
And then you see how ridiculous it is, and then you say, you know what, none of this next year, just a moment of silence, which is what they should do in all courtrooms and all things in America. They should say, you know what, no more religious stuff. Just take it all off because it's separation of church and state. Same with this. You can't force these foreign people to do what we do in our country. It's not right. You're not coming here, and it's not like, oh, you want to be in our country playing our World Series, and you're going to... No.
I mean, that's the other point. It has nothing to do with the fact that we're in the United States.
Right, exactly.
This is a global event. This is the premier poker tournament in the world.
Absolutely.
As evidenced by the fact that 99 countries have been represented, probably more than that now, have been represented here.
Absolutely.
And I think we need to treat it as a global event. This isn't the World Series in baseball, which is always hilarious because it at most represents two countries. at best. Usually it's one. This truly is a World Series of poker. And I think that needs to be how everybody that plays and participates in it treats it.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, we still got to get a couple of Antia updates here for you. First of all, players looking to win their way on board our November 7th Antia Poker Cruise out of Tampa now have an online opportunity to do so. CardPlayerClub.com is hosting a free roll on July 10th. It's coming up here next week. The cruise package is the top prize. For details, visit AntiaCruises.com and click on the Tampa link. Subscription poker is permitted in 37 states in the District of Columbia. There's no cost or obligation to enter this tournament. Though obviously, if you'd like to join Card Player Club, you can do that and pay one low monthly fee and play as much as you like. And my understanding is not a ton of people sign up for this. So this is a really easy way to get on board the cruise if folks want to go sign up right now.
Cool. Well, cool and not cool. I mean, you want more people to participate. You want them to enjoy that site and everything. But yeah, cool that you have a chance to win it. So hurry up, rush over there. You've got 1 week left, so...
And speaking of 1 week left, you have less than a week left to cast your ballot in Antiup's MPD Most Popular Dealer Contest. Go to antiupmagazine.com/MPD and vote for up to 3 dealers in each of the 5 regions. All voters are automatically entered into a drawing to win one more than 400 prizes from our sponsors. Voting is open through July 8th, so get there quickly. And of course, if you are using Safari, either on your iPhone, your iPad, or your Apple, you need to enable cookies to complete the voting, and we did post the top 3 vote getters as of now in all 5 of the regions on our Twitter page and Facebook page, so check those out. But a lot of those races are super close, and so anybody can win.
So exciting. Hey, speaking of exciting, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. All right, we're going to refresh our memories here. Here comes part 1.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated in a 2-5 casino cash game. The action has been surprisingly timid, with us being the only one showing any aggression. Because of this, we are up nearly 300 without having won any notably large pots, just several small ones. We sit with 795. The game is 8-handed. The blinds post, under the gun limps, and it's folded around to us on the cutoff with the Jack of Diamonds, Jack of Clubs. This is a pretty good hand, and one we can expect to take down right away with a raise. We make it $25 to go, which has been enough to take down pots up to this point. It's folded around to the under the gun who makes the call. This player is very patient, and probably plays too tight. He sneered when he saw us raise, almost like he's getting sick of our aggression. Perhaps he's calling loosely to take a stand? He sits with 400 and checks dark. So we're heads up going to a flop with about $50 in the pot. It comes down the 10 of diamonds, 4 of diamonds, deuce of diamonds. Not a horrible flop, all unders giving us a flush draw with an overpair. Since our opponent checked dark, we decide to make a bet. $35 sounds about right. Our opponent almost beats us into the middle with a call. That's weird. With about 120 in the pot, the turn pairs the board, the 10 of clubs. Once again, our opponent checks. We're going to play some pot control here and check behind. His play just seems extremely suspect right now, not his usual MO. The river is the 3 of diamonds, putting 4 diamonds on the board. Our opponent thinks only for a short while before making it $50 to go, just under half the pot. What's the play?
I'm not folding here with my stack in my hand. I certainly don't think a raise is wise. To me, this is an easy call and just hope our jack is good.
Yeah, I'm saying call. Not a great hand. I think we'll probably be... so it's not as easy as a call for me as it was for you to say that, but I still think it's worth it.
I mean, that's a good point. I mean, I don't think it's easy because I don't think we're beat. I think you're probably right. There's, you know, obviously two hands that have us crushed here, and it's very reasonable to think that both have. It's just, I guess, I'm looking at my chip stack the bet that's been made here, and, you know, it seems like a good investment in case we are good.
I agree.
I will not be surprised if when O'Malley comes back on the mic here that we are walking away from this pot empty-handed.
All right, we're going to hear what he says right now.
Hello again. What's this guy's line? Why only 50? We already know he's a tight player. Now we have to decide if his pre-flop call was legit or a frustration call. Why the snap call on the flop? Was he on a draw as well? Maybe it's some kind of 10. When it all comes down to it, this is more of a curiosity call than anything. I guess I should have put it together that this was very much a value bet, but it's just too small to fold. We call. Our opponent tables the ace of diamonds, queen of clubs, for a rivered ace-high flush, and we lose 100-plus bucks. Oh well, it's not a good way to approach poker, but I just had to know. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, when curiosity gets the better of you, it's best to have a short memory. I hope to see you on the felt.
And we're walking away from the spot, MGM. I'm not surprised at all. No, you know, this makes sense. I think O'Malley's right. Our opponent bet the right amount to get value for his hand. I'm not going to regret the call, and not just because I'm not result-oriented. I think it was a good... an opponent bet a good amount, and we said, oh, hey, with our chip stack and what our hand is here, I'd be willing to pay 50 bucks to find out if I'm winning.
Yeah.
And we did, and we lost. You know, yeah. I think it was a good investment. It just didn't pay out, you know. It's like buying a stock, you know. You feel like it's a good price, and then it goes down, and you lose a little money. Well, it doesn't mean it's a bad decision.
It's just the way it went.
Yeah.
Yeah, not much left to say here. I agree. It wasn't a great situation, but it really wasn't something I thought we could get away from. And it really didn't need to. I mean, yeah, you could have saved 50 bucks, but you could have won a big pot. So, not a big pot, but a decent pot. So, I think it was worth a call.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiefmagazine.com. This comes from our old friend Jason Grimes.
Yeah, baby.
All right, so he says, this comes from a 10,000 guaranteed online poker tournament. $11 entry fee. 1,200 entries. The money bubble is at 180, and at this point there are 124 players left, so we're all in the money.
Yay!
Hands over. Congratulations.
Go ready to go, buddy. You're in the cash.
Blinds are 2,500. I'm sorry, 250 ante, 1,250, 2,500 of the blinds. And we have just been moved to a new nine-handed table.
Okay.
Under the gun, plus one goes all in for 11,000. Middle position player goes all in for 42,000. And I'm in late position with 32,000 and jack of clubs, jack of spades.
I fold.
All right, done.
I'm serious. I mean, really,
go back and add some other segments back.
I can't. No, I mean, do you fold here? I mean, you got even at best, you're maybe an overpair to another pair, but you've got four cards there. You could conceivably be racing ace king and have an overpair to your overpair, and you're just screwed. I mean, I just for jacks. I mean, you know that saying, so. You know, if you fold it, you know you're going to be ahead and you would have won the hand because there's no way to play jacks right. But I'm folding. I am. I'm folding. Plus, how much you say we had? 30-something thousand?
32,000, yes.
Yeah, so if I lose the big hand, the big stack, okay. I'm down to 11,000. And I have, what, four blinds after that? Right now I have 15 or so, 12, 15. I mean, I'm letting it go. I'm letting it go.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what he did, and we can go back and have a little bit more discussion. He says, with 12.8 big blinds, I think I have to call, and here's why I came up with this idea. I had 12 big blinds, actually 13, really. It's hard to find a better hand to push call with. Two, it's a new table, so I'm just going on generalities, but for some reason I'm wanting to put the large stack in middle position on ace-king. If I can beat him, then beat him, even though I lose the main pot, I can show a slight net profit on the hand. Me versus ace-king is a coin flip. So maybe I shouldn't be flipping at this point. But the next significant pay bump doesn't come into around 70 or 60 players, so it's a bit far away. Three, I have 12 big blinds. Yes, I said it again because this is the main thing pointing me towards call. My friends have been split 50-50. The call people are with me in the what better hand spot you hoping to get. The fold people are in the second all-in means get out of the way. And also, quote, I would fold and hope for ace queen or something better by one of them if he's too insane and not to be trusted.
Okay, here's the deal. If you do beat the guy in the middle, I don't see how that's really a profit, because if it's 22 versus 11,000, it's not. I mean, you're not. I mean, it's not. I mean, you make money because you're, but you still have to pay 11 to the other guy, and you've paid. You've won 22, so yeah, you'll make 11. But it's he's making it sound like it's worth 11 to risk 30 or 22. You know what I mean? That doesn't sound right to me. You're putting in 22, and you're thinking you might win 11. I mean, and if you do, you win it all. Then okay, you're winning 33 for your 30 for your 22, whatever. And that's, I just, there's just too many. Like, I think I agree with some of his friends who said the second all in is like, hey, I'm risking 22 grand. I'm risking my 10 big blinds on this hand against another guy who was under the gun plus one shoving. We have to have at least a couple of cards that are either ahead of us or a pair that's, you know, could be bigger than us. I mean, you could be looking at queens or. Or anything. It's tough. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm folding jacks.
Well, yeah, this is one of the things I really like about the short stack ninja lifestyle is doing the math on these kind of things. And by doing the math, I mean my crappy English journalism major math, right? Yeah. Not real math here.
Right.
But so a couple things come into play here. I mean, well, obviously we are short stacked, you know, 12, 13 big blinds is not a lot. But my MO is not to call off in that spot unless, as we've talked about on previous shows, I'm really short stacked and like five people are in the pot and I have like a suited connector or something where I really could
make a lot of money,
quadruple up, yeah, right? Or yeah. Right. So generally, I mean, if I'm the first one in with this hand, I absolutely shove it all day long, right?
For sure.
Well, we've got two all in, so now all of a sudden I'm not liking this so much, and I think I need to get out of the way here, and just wait for another hand. And one of the things he said in his first thing is, I had 12 big blinds. It's hard to find a better hand to push slash call with. Take that slash call off, and I totally agree with you, but calling is a little different story, I think. Now, the other thing I think is interesting about this is, Underground plus one goes all the way in for 11K. Obviously, he's got four big blinds, so he could have anything, right?
Right.
Middle position player, instead of just calling the 11K, which generally in these things, even though we're about, you know, 120 spots away from the next money bump, generally in these spots, I find that players tend to want to call and do the wink-wink collusion, right?
Right.
Just try to knock a player out. So the fact that he is going all in here instead of just calling makes me wonder why. And he's got 42K. We don't know what the rest of the chip stacks are at the table, and that probably would help me a little bit in this. But
oh, he's got. Are they say at 22K?
No, he has 42K.
Oh, geez. Well, then before I was talking about him not really making that much is wrong because he could win 30 off that. I thought you said 22. I wrote it down as 22. I'm sorry.
Ah, sorry. Yeah.
Oh, no. Okay. Well, then earlier when I was saying that he can make some decent money on the middle guy, then he could, I guess. I was thinking it was 22, not 42. All right, I'm sorry. So take all that stuff, yeah, I said before and forget it.
Forget that. all right, so I'm curious as to why this guy decided to go all in. And generally speaking, again, we're all speaking generalities, in these kind of situations, it's because this guy wants to shut everybody else out of the pot. This is not a bounty tournament, so he's not just trying to collect a bounty, right?
Right.
He doesn't want to go up against a bunch of other hands here. So that leads me to believe it's a vulnerable hand, a good enough hand to go all in with, but a vulnerable hand. And generally, to me, that's a smaller pair. That's like an eights or nines kind of hand,
mm-hmm,
which, of course, we have crushed. Or it could be an ace-king kind of thing. But if it's an ace-king, ace-queen, I'm not sure I'm going to get all up into people's business with an all-in. Really seems to me like this is a small pair, and this guy's like, you know, hey, I'll go after this guy with two random cards, the end of the gun player, because he's got four big blinds, and he can have anything, right, with my pair. But I don't want a bunch of other people in this pot trying to go after it, and I want that lemon cater myself. So I'm going to shove, and generally that's going to tell people, hey, I've got a hand, get out of the way. So a lot of me is thinking that we might be ahead of both of these. Now, the other part of me now says we might be ahead of all of them, but we have to fade a lot of cards here, right?
Right.
So at the end of the day, I'm folding here, but I'm not going to be surprised if the middle position guy turns over a pocket pair that's less than jacks and the board runs out and we could have, you know, knocked a player out, done a lot of damage to another player, and significantly increased our stack. You know, if we were closer to a money bubble or something, all right, but, you know, we got a lot of way to go here, and I don't know.
Playing the win.
I think I'm going to wait for a spot where I'm pushing and keep grinding away at this. I'm not a home run hitter at the poker table. I'm a Pete Rose, get on base, singles kind of guy.
Because you bet on yourself.
Exactly, absolutely.
Listen, so I think those are all valid points, and I understand both sides of the coin, I guess, and that's probably why his friends are 50-50.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I'm not at all surprised it's 50-50.
Yeah. So. I just feel like you, because I do have so many, I mean, okay, so the M is obviously slightly less than, you know, than the 12 blinds this guy has or whatever it is. So you're thinking when you get to the M of whatever, 8 or 7 or something, you guys were thinking about shoving anyway. So that's one thing. But to call the four cards, you know, when somebody's saying, I think he's much more than one of his friends was saying something to the effect of, you know, what better spot are you looking? Well, I mean, okay, so you have to be pretty much clairvoyant to put it exactly on the two hands that Scott mentioned, where one has some sort of ace rag and the other guy has a pair of eights, and you're only dodging the two outer to lose a big stack, and you're dodging a three outer to lose 11 grand. Right. So, you know, or get eliminated. But now that the guy's got 42,000, I'm definitely not taking the chance of getting eliminated here. If it was 22, then that's where I was kind of like on the fence about it.
That makes sense.
But at 42, now I'm putting my entire tournament life on racing two guys that I have no idea what they have and possibly being eliminated if it was 42,000. So to me, I'm not getting eliminated with jacks. I am not calling off my tournament life with an all-in under the gun, a reshove all-in middle position, and then I have jacks. And plus, I don't know who's behind me. It's just I'm not the big blind, right?
Yeah, we're late positions.
Yeah, so I mean, there's still people behind us that could say, you know what, I'm never going to get a better spot than this with my money angle. Three guys all in. Now you're racing 6 cards, 8 cards. Who knows?
That's a very good point. Yep.
So I'm folding jacks. I really am.
All right. So our hero decides to call. Short stack, who is the under the gun plus one that shoved, had ace. That's a nice hand to wake up with four big blinds, isn't it?
Oh, man.
The large stack in middle position had ace king. And of course, we had the jack. Board ran out ace 7 8, queen 3.
Oh man, the case ace comes out to beat him too. Ace, he was so right on the middle position and still loses to the guy with all the aces out but one. Wow, that's brutal. Brutal. So he's out. He's out of the tournament now with that jack.
Yeah.
See, that's the thing. You just don't know how to play him. Now, if you had folded him, it would have been you're up against 8 8. Ace rag, and it would have come all rags, and you would have won. See, that's what I'm telling you. You got to know when. No, but really, jacks are just a big pain. They really are.
But, you know, again, I just really don't like to call off my chips.
Yeah.
And I want to be shoving. Even when I have like four big blinds, I'd rather be shoving and hoping that the table's tight as a clam and folds, and I pick up the blinds. Right.
Yeah.
By just calling, it's just you lose so much. You lose one of the big ways of winning a pot. Right.
Yeah.
You shove, everybody can fold, and you don't have to turn your cards over and you win. When you're calling, you're going to have to turn your cards over, and your cards are going to have to hold up. There's no negotiation on the river, you know? Hey, is my jack looking a little pretty? Oh, yeah, you're right, I fold. You know, your hand has to win. So that's, you know, again, I think people panic when they get down into these short stacks, and I totally agree that if you keep waiting for an awesome hand to shove with, that's a bad way of playing a short stack. But I think just to call off with any hand that you think is exciting is also a mistake as well, generally.
You know, and aside from our good friend Jason getting eliminated from this tournament, the sickest thing is the guy in the middle makes money.
He has
ace-king, goes up against ace-ace and jack-jack, hits a one-outer and makes money, more money on this. Well, not more than the first guy because he made 33, I guess, but basically gets knock us out, moves himself closer to a bigger payday, and makes more money and more chips. I mean, it's just crazy. This game is crazy. It's a crazy game.
Well, I guarantee you that guy wasn't excited when we came along for the party.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm
and
sure he
was. Certainly wasn't excited when the hands are turned over and saw that you know, he was going to have to hit the case ace or one of the three kings to just beat us.
Yeah,
kind of under a straight kind of situation, but. But, you know, that's poker, right? what a brutal way. You know, it'd be better if he got to hit the king. Then you're like, all right, fine, whatever.
He gets one outed and he gets eliminated from the tournament. That's brutal. All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.